Welcome to the U.S. Payments Forum podcast. I'm Marie Jordan, and today we're exploring one of the most transformative forces in the payments industry, machine learning. As payments professionals, we all know the pace of change is relentless, and machine learning is at the heart of how we're tackling new challenges, fighting fraud, and driving innovation. In this episode, we'll explore what machine learning really means for payments, why it's become essential in today's environment, and how it's reshaping the way we think about risk, security, and customer experience. We'll also look ahead to the trends and actors driving the next wave of change. I'm Marie Jordan, and I'll be your moderator today. And I'm thrilled to be joined by two of today's top industry leaders. Jonathan Robinson is Vice President of Risk Intelligence, Strategy, and Development at Valera, where he oversees risk, data acquisition, AI, and machine learning integration, and fraud strategy management. Jonathan, welcome.
Thank you, Marie.
We also have Lenny Guzel, who is head of fraud solutions for FeedDi in North America, focused on equipping financial institutions with the tools and expertise to keep customers safe. Lenny, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much, Marie.
I'm so happy to have you both with us so we can talk about this important topic. So how about we jump right in? So I thought we'd start kind of with the basics. So Jonathan, perhaps you can start us off with this one. What is machine learning and why is it so important for payments today?
Such an important question here. So machine learning is a branch of AI that enables systems to learn from data and improve over time without being explicitly programmed to do so. So in the context of financial services and fraud prevention, it's a game changer. We use ML models to detect patterns in transaction behavior, flag anomalies, and adapt to evolving fraud tactics in real time using that functionality. It's like giving our systems the ability to think and respond faster than any manual process could, you know, helping us protect our 120 plus million cardholders and reduce risk with precision and speed. Kind of like picking out that proverbial needle in a haystack, but you're not sure what the needle looks like, and you're processing 2 million haystacks an hour. That kind of brings it in light there.
That's a great illustration. Thanks for breaking that down. So there's a lot of talk about generative AI these days. I don't think you can look anywhere without hearing about it. And I know some of our listeners might be wondering how it sort of fits in. So maybe, Lenny, can you help us understand how does machine learning sort of differ from generative AI, especially in the context of fraud prevention? And are there any common misconceptions we should clear up?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's important to note that machine learning as a branch of AI study and actual application has been around for quite some time, as opposed to generative AI, as we've all been very much kind of hearing about it just in the last several years. And it's become kind of prime time just recently in terms of being applicable and usable, both by us consumers using things like ChatGPT, as well as for various types of business applications. I and others have started to refer to machine learning, which has been out there in the market and available quite some time, as predictive AI, as compared to what we're calling generative AI. And the simplest way to understand it, they're different technologies, they're different branches of AI technology, and machine learning is very good at predicting something based on past behavior, based on past understanding, as opposed to generative AI, which is exactly as the name kind of intends. It creates new content based on having a lot of context and a lot of volume for all kinds of content that exists out there in the world. Whereas machine learning is really honed to things like making a prediction for fraud detection. Generative AI, different applications. The two are symbiotic. They can be used together. There's different use cases. I'll pause, Marie, because you'll probably ask me or ask us both, well, what are some of those use cases? But the two are different branches of AI, different technologies, and really the simplest way is predicting versus generating content.
Well, maybe let's go ahead and expand on that. So can you share with us some of those use cases?
Yeah. So in the context of fraud prevention, first and foremost, there's the quite robust and mature technology of machine learning, which, as Jonathan was describing, is exceptionally good at understanding patterns in historic data in order to be able to help with predicting transactions, events, interactions in the payment stream of what may be risky and what may be fraudulent. Generative AI has different applications. So generative AI, for example, how others are thinking about marrying the two, there are certain situations in which not enough data exists for a machine to learn from. Machine learning depends on lots of data, obviously, for it to learn. But in situations where there's sparse data, for example, let's say a financial institution is looking to roll out a new product or new capability, and there isn't historic data with which to train a machine to learn from that historic data, generative AI could be very useful to create synthetic data, because that's what it does. It generates or creates new content or new data. And so marrying the two in this way has been very helpful in certain situations in order to enrich a sparse data set or create a data set where one doesn't exist, such that you can then train a predictive model using machine learning based on that synthetic data.
Excellent. So maybe if we can just step back just a little bit, I think there are probably many organizations out there that still rely on rules-based systems. How does machine learning sort of change the game from that? And Jonathan, how is machine learning different from current rules-based fraud prevention systems?
So traditional rules-based fraud systems rely on like predefined logic, like flagging a transaction that's over a certain dollar amount or from specific locations if you have geo information, you know, X number of miles away from a person's residence, for example. They're really fast and they're really transparent, but they're rigid. And bad actors, as we see, they quickly learn to work around them. So in contrast, machine learning adapts to those evolving patterns. It learns from historical data to detect subtle anomalies in those that rules might miss, like behavioral shifts or transaction sequences. One key advantage is the ability to uncover, you know, those emerging fraud tactics without needing those manual updates like those rules-based systems would, making that dynamic layer of defense in financial services. And an important thing here is to keep in mind that you're building an onion. It's not turning off your rules-based fraud systems and replacing them in whole with ML or anything else. ML is just another layer on top of your rules-based solution. And those rules-based solutions are not going away anytime soon. But it's definitely something that's additive, having both multiple layers. That's the key.
I like that example. You're building an onion. I think that's very helpful to understand that things aren't going away. You're just adding to that and building on top of it. Those are excellent insights. So maybe let's get a little practical here. Lenny, can you kind of walk us through how machine learning works in payments fraud detection, like both for online transactions and in-store purchases?
Absolutely. And I'll kind of describe it and weave in what Jonathan was just saying in terms of how the two systems work together and the value of it. So how it works in practice is you would take a set of historic transactions as much as possible, the more the better for the machine to learn, and label, without immediately getting overly complex, there's two different types of machine learning. One is called supervised and one is called unsupervised. And what that really just means is supervision of machine learning means that you have truth data, ground truth. So what that means in our business and fraud is out of the, let's say, the last several months of payments in any particular channel or kind of business, that we know which ones were fraudulent. And by labeling the fraudulent transactions in a historic data set, the machine is able to then learn very quickly and become quite powerful with being able to predict based on those payments that are known to be fraudulent in historic data. The model is then trained such that it can distinguish and ultimately deliver a score that is as effective at capturing the fraud as possible, i.e. capture as much of the fraud as possible as new transactions are coming in, while being as efficient as possible, meaning that those frauds score higher on the scale of whatever that score is, and you minimize false positives, which then result obviously in customer friction and downstream costs. That is the overwhelming application of machine learning, and the key requirement there is having a rich, longstanding data set of payments, any particular payment rail, particular channel, particular type, and the truth data to label those needles in the haystack that Jonathan was describing in that historic data set for which ones were fraud.
Excellent. So could you give us kind of some examples of like success rates and how this has really sort of changed the game in terms of the predictive nature of it and how it has improved those false positives?
Absolutely.
Or eliminated those false positives?
Absolutely. I'll jump in here, Jonathan, a bit more, and then I'm sure you'll have some of these things to say. So to Jonathan's point before, in terms of rule-based systems and the questions that you asked, what we're seeing, and now consistently over many years now of practice, is coming in to any type of fraud detection stack or system, which is dependent on rules, the ability to apply a machine learning score immediately gets you several significant results. Number one, there is very often significant kind of basis point, sometimes even percentage point lift in the an overall fraud detection, at fraud capture rate, and oftentimes at a similar or even reduced false positive rate. Another very significant benefit is, as Jonathan was describing, there is an adaptability to machine learning such that it's catching more than just what any specific rules are going to be coded to find. And lastly, and this is very important, rules are not just rigid and therefore are only going to catch very specific things that you may know about from the past, but they're also quite expensive and challenging to maintain. And so in almost all cases, we see an organization starts to reduce some of the complexity and reliance in their rules and start to really layer rules on top of the score. And this is where Jonathan was 100% right, that the two really go hand in glove, and you're kind of a multidimensional onion in many respects, in that you are really, the score allows you to classify which payment has risk associated, medium risk, high risk, low risk, which then allows you to build a much more targeted rule set that takes advantage of that score and allows you to reduce reliance on rigid rules, reduce reliance on complex rules that are challenging to maintain, and immediately get you lift in your key performance metrics that are going to matter to the fraud organization and bottom line to the business.
Excellent. So Jonathan, maybe if you could kind of share like how your customers are actually using the technology to reduce risk and improve outcomes. And are there real world examples that you can share? Maybe Lenny, you can share as well.
Sure. So we perform at Valera, we perform these functions on behalf of our customers, on behalf of our financial institution clients, primarily credit unions, using machine learning to reduce fraud risk by shifting from reactive to proactive strategies. Instead of waiting for the fraud to happen, those ML models analyze vast amounts of transaction data in real time, flagging anomalies before they escalate. An example here is, you know, we create intelligent scoring based upon activity across all channels that we touch. So it's not only looking at the transaction log, but you have to go way deeper than that. If you can include logs from things like mobile banking, card authorizations, dark web monitoring that you get from maybe third-party vendors, information and additional detail you can get from FeedZone too, where they're monitoring, say, one or two channels for us, I can use that information, apply that to the data set to train our ML models, and it can look for the same type of behavior, perhaps on another channel. So it's not really just about detection by looking at just the transaction. You know, that's really important. But looking at things like the IVR, online banking, or tens of thousands of phone calls that come into our contact centers a day, each of these events include metadata that is really, really valuable here. Phone numbers, IP addresses, device IDs, or even behavior. So if someone's using their online banking app and is using a program to virtualize it, put a copy of it on their laptop or computer, and are using it to attempt to breach accounts, perform account takeovers. If you can see that the timing in between the button presses is exactly the same across multiple accounts, there's an anomaly there And that's something that can be used to, again, increase that risk score. And in many cases, because we're looking at everything, the transaction, but including everything before it, there are many times we can prevent that loss before it's actually even attempted.
And I'll jump in here and say that challenge of how do you create and manage a rule set? How do you even code up a rule set that's looking at so many different heterogeneous kind of disparate types of events, transactions, as Jonathan is describing? It's a tremendous challenge, but this is the power of machine learning, which machines can very quickly understand the context of that data, of those different kinds of data, different channels, different types of events, different types of signals on the digital channel, different types of signals about how your device is behaving, as Jonathan was describing. Being able to have a machine learning model that is aware of all of those contextual events is really what one of the significant powers. It's almost impossible to try to make sense of all of those different events, the sequence of them, the different types of them, to try to come up with any kind of a waterfall rule logic. It will be very challenging for human beings to do that. Machine learning here is a key, especially because we are now in an environment that, as Jonathan is describing, where you can't just look at the payment events themselves. You really want to have the benefit of understanding as much of the contextual customer journey interactions that the customer is doing with you across the different channels that you offer. Machine learning is really key here. I'll say FeedsEye was born from machine learning researchers, AI researchers, machine learning and complex event processing researchers in academia and in Portugal, who stumbled upon the fraud problem, as you do when you're working with machine learning. And we really concentrate and focus on bringing the power of this technology to our customers. It's not simple, and it's often not one and done. And so where you really start to leverage the power of machine learning is where you're able to add additional events and be able to retrain your models as you're adding events, being able to retrain your models as you learn more about different kind of fraud topologies and be able to provide more labels. And so that machine learning loop, as we like to refer to it, of being able to understand what data there is, being able to learn, being able to provide a rich and robust score, and then having the humans in that loop who are investigating and uncovering and confirming what is fraud, what isn't fraud, as continuous feedback into those models, and then being able to both recalibrate quickly as well as retrain models when you're adding those different types of context and information is really where the power really comes alive.
That's excellent. So thank you for sharing those examples. And I kind of want to touch on, I mean, implementing this technology does not sound easy at all. I'm just listening to you both. What are some of the main challenges that you both see from financial institutions, what they may face when they're implementing some of these type of solutions?
I'm happy to start here. And so much of our work has been concentrating on how do we make it as simple as possible for organizations to take advantage of this technology. What we've concentrated on is solving two large challenges. One is, how do you get data into the machine as easily and quickly as you can? And the second is, how do you empower your citizen data scientists, your fraud analytics type of people, whatever level of data science qualifications they may or may not have, to be able to monitor the model, to be able to retrain those models, and to automate. Really, we use a technology called AutoML for how to automate as many parts or steps of that machine learning loop and making it as easy as possible. That second part is we really concentrate on that as a company and as a fraud solutions provider. Kind of what we focus on having a user interface, which really simplifies many of those steps with how do you know what your model's doing? How do you train the model? We simplify as much as possible the ability to provide feedback into the model. And then we have made this a cloud-based set of APIs that are as standard as possible so that any type of activity, any type of payment, so if it's a standard ISO 8583, that payment could easily be sent to us. If it's any type of digital activity or digital interaction or activity on another channel, such that that could also be easily packaged and sent to us via an API, because those are the two main challenges. How do you get data to it? And then once you get data into it, how do you actually enable your analytics and kind of data science resources to use it?
Jonathan, what about you? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. For the previous question, let me mention this one. One of the biggest challenges FIs face when implementing ML jobs for fraud prevention is integration. You know, a lot of the systems in a lot of FIs are siloed, you know, like having 30 plus MFA tools that don't talk to each other, making it really hard to share data across those channels and build like a unified fraud picture. At Valera, we and this was probably about 6 or 7 years ago, we started small. We initially started pulling in around 2 million events a day. We thought that was a lot of the time, which was funny, because now we pull that in every 20 minutes. So it's definitely something where you can start small on one topic and grow from there. But another hurdle is really data quality and consistency. You know, as we all know, fraudsters evolve quickly. And without clean, near real-time data, models can't adapt fast enough. There's also the issue of interpretability. Teams need to trust and understand the decisions that these models make, paired with documentation, especially when, you know, the customer experience and compliance is on the line.
Yeah, so just kind of pulling on that thread a little bit. So even if banks are using this technology, as you just mentioned, humans are still accountable here. There's still compliance. So how does that work in practice?
So you're right. Humans remain fully accountable here. So these models are really powerful tools. They don't operate in isolation. Analysts and fraud teams are responsible for training, validating, monitoring the models, ensuring they're accurate and fair. When a model flags a transaction or event, it's up to humans to investigate and make a judgment call and refine the system. Accountability also extends to compliance. Regulators expect transparency. That means humans need to be able to explain how the decisions are made, especially when, you know, customer trust is on the line. If you're performing an action, like even looking outside of the fraud, something like underwriting, if you're going to decline someone, you need to be able to explain in an articulable way why. And you know, documentation behind those models, knowing how they're created and why they make a particular decision, is super important here.
Such great points, Jonathan. I'll add that there is a very strong components of a governance required with being able to build, deploy, and operate machine learning model. And in most financial institutions, that's the model governance or model risk management MRM team. And in order to actually deploy and be able to operate a machine learning model, it needs to go through that process. It's quite an involved and rigorous process because of all that governance and compliance and explainability, interpretability, as Jonathan, that's absolutely required in a financial services environment where you're making decisions that could adversely affect customers. And so there's a tremendous body of practice for how do you get a machine learning model to go as efficiently and quickly as possible through a model risk management process. We concentrate a lot on that. We've certainly, there's no end to what are the ways that we can, you know, generate reports out of a machine learning environment such as FeedsEye in order to accelerate that model risk management process so that ultimately you can enable the business. Oftentimes where you have an incredibly performant machine learning model score that the business is dying to put into production in order to start improving their outcomes, and they can't because it has not yet gone through model risk management. And so how do you account for that? How do you build capabilities inside of a system like FeedsEye such that you can go through that process as quickly and efficiently as possible? It's key.
That's a very important perspective. And just sort of building out maybe on the governance piece, I wanted to just touch for a second on ethics. I've done a couple of stints in public policy, and these are always questions that I get in that arena. Are there ethical considerations that payment professionals should keep in mind when they're deploying machine learning?
So as far as ethical considerations, this is something that really should be addressed during the planning phase and does require a bit of creativity too. It's entirely possible for a model to unintentionally learn and perpetuate biases present in your historical data. In fraud detection, for example, this could lead to, say, unfair targeting of certain demographics or geographic regions. Unintended, however, it will impact your cardholders. governance and continuous monitoring are really key here. Considering something like model drift, and that's where a model's performance degrades over time based upon real world activity, that could move your compliant model into non-compliance. So it's not a set it and forget it type of solution. It's something that does require continuous monitoring and collecting new training data, reassessing the output, all critical, especially when you're using it for something like fraud detection, securing those funds. Some machine learning tools include governance functions, but there are external tools, Amazon SageMaker, if you're on AWS, that's one of them, that can be used by your group, IT, or compliance and legal within your group to monitor for that, those ethical considerations.
Spot on. And so we've actually invested significant amount in specific technology in order to deal with all of these kind of ethical issues and in particular things like bias in machine learning models. And what I mean by invested was we've actually defined a framework that we have open sourced. We've called it a trust framework. The trust is an acronym for tested, robust, I forget the U, and it's secure, and I'm blanking on the rest of the acronym. The acronym is nice, but it is an actual framework for how to test any machine learning model in order to understand where there may be bias or any kind of ethical considerations, and to be able to do that prior to deploying any kind of model. We've open sourced this framework. We've published it in the scientific community. We've published it in the machine learning data science community. It's a critical consideration for us because of what Jonathan described, is simply to be able to make sure that we're empowering our customers to be able to use these models effectively and to keep them compliant as much as possible. I'll give an example of a particular point of bias. We know that the elderly and vulnerable population that is often very targeted by fraudsters and that needs particular care, and there's regulations that require particular care for how you deal with those, that customer base. Well, what we found is as a result of that extra care that the elderly and vulnerable population requires, we often will go to a customer who's using some other kind of technology or their own machine learning models from their own internal environments, and we've applied our trust framework, and we've seen that there is significant multiple percentage points additional adverse impact on the elderly population, which is false positives, as a result of an increased sensitivity in the model to try to protect that population. And so here it was such a real world example of where we're trying to do good, but in fact we are adding bias into our model as a result of trying to protect a particular population. And there are specific techniques that can be used in order to, first of all, uncover that bias through that testing framework that I described, and then to eliminate or mitigate dramatically that bias without sacrificing the actual detection performance. And so it's things like that that are so important.
Definitely. That's a great example, and thank you for sharing that. It's very illuminating as well. So finally, I wanted to maybe try to look ahead. I always ask a little crystal ball question. I know it's kind of hard to look out, but I'll ask you both, maybe kind of weigh in here. How do you see payments fraud prevention evolving? I'll say, I had the question as next 5 to 10 years, but maybe narrowing down like the next 5 years, because technology is advancing so rapidly. How do you see payments fraud prevention evolving over the next 5 years? And what should our audience be watching for? Lainey, maybe we'll start with you.
Sure. To the extent that any financial institution is not yet taking full advantage of machine learning technology, I see vendors and providers like FeedsEye, and there's others who are quickly making this capability ubiquitous and putting it into the hands of payment fraud professionals everywhere. And so that is not only, I see kind of trend line that because the technology happens to be there and we know how powerful and important it is, but because of what we heard Jonathan describing earlier, which is the significant demands on fraud professionals in any payment context to be able to understand as much as possible about the customer context across their interactions with a financial institution, and to be able to pull in and enrich with signals from additional third parties as the customer is going through a journey. You know, whether you're trying to get more information about a phone number or an email address, or you're trying to reach out to a particular consortium to understand something about the other side of the transaction, all of that data is becoming critical in order to deal with the criminal community as they are today, and how quickly they're taking advantage of the digital world in which we live, and how quickly they adapt and how quickly they take advantage of weaknesses. And so in the context of this conversation of machine learning, I see it as an absolute necessity, as a baseline necessity, in order to be able to deal with the fraud as it's actually occurring today. A couple of thoughts, but I'll pause here and let Jonathan jump in.
Yeah, I think you got it, Lenny. Payment fraud prevention will shift from reactive detection to real-time predictive defense across more and more FIs and just industries as a whole. Specifically, like machine learning will evolve, you know, as you mentioned, dynamic cross-channel intelligence, linking data from mobile banking, card authorizations, and everywhere else you can get your hands on data. That deeper integration with biometrics, behavioral analytics, and consortium data. We found that consortium data is super key in a lot of the things that we do. You know, helping institutions detect synthetic identities, deep fake scams, and in milliseconds, rather than waiting until that loss occurs. I also see that the industry is moving toward unifying fraud and AML strategies, further breaking down those silos to fight financial crime holistically. So really, in short, it's speed, adaptability, and collaboration will definitely define the future here.
Absolutely. Lenny, did you have a couple of other thoughts?
I do, but I almost don't want to, because I don't know who could say it better than what Jonathan just said, but I'll add a couple of just really kind of practical points in terms of what we see happening out there. So we know how we've all been in the industry kind of talking about two deep problems that is going to take the next 5 to 10 years for us to really understand how to solve, which is scams and deep fakes. So AI generated deep fake technology, and then of course scams of every color and stripe. So how we start to not just apply a model, a machine learning model, but how we start to empower payment fraud professionals to be able to have multiple flexible models and be able to assemble these models in order to deal with different types of threats across all those kind of disparate events and different types of fraud typologies. And in particular, how we start to improve our ability to train machine learning models for scams, i.e. where the customer is wittingly or unwittingly taking action on their own. The part of the problem, and where we really need to take the industry and where it has to go, is that we don't yet have the labeling, that ground truth, not enough of it, and not as richly defined labels for what kind of scam and what's actually occurring in order to truly take advantage of the power of machine learning. And I think this is where the industry is racing and has to race towards being able to implement kind of all the people, process, and technology required in order to fully apply the power of machine learning to this new type of fraud typologies that need to be labeled and classified a different way for machine learning models to really learn. And then the second part is the deepfakes. The criminals are attacking human channels, so call center channels in particular, anything that they could do on the digital channels, and they're impersonating financial institutions at will. They're fully taking advantage of generative AI technologies to fake every kind of document that you could possibly imagine. And so how we use machine learning technology to do forensics in order for us to be able to put power back into the hands of payment fraud professionals is absolutely the frontier for the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, I believe we're out of time here, and I think this is a great place for us to stop. So as we wrap up, I want to thank you both for sharing your expertise and insights on this really important topic. This has been incredibly valuable. Machine learning is clearly reshaping the payments landscape, and I know we're going to be talking about all of this that you guys have shared with us for quite some time. For our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about getting involved with the U.S. Payments Forum, be sure to visit the website and check out upcoming events and resources. Thank you both, and thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.